This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
I can't help but be reminded the importance of collaboration, working with others. And so one group of the others who can be advocates are legislators. And so our next speaker is Senator Scott Wiener, who has represented San Francisco and Northern San Mateo County in the California legislature since 2016. He has authored over 100 laws, including pioneering legislation to lower prescription drug costs, rein in abuses by pharmacy benefit managers, and expand access to mental health treatments and advance single-payer health care in California. He's a champion for housing affordability, public transportation, and accountability for ICE and other lawless acts by the current administration. This year, he is advancing legislation to protect funding for scientific research in California and to crack down on wrongful denials from healthcare insurance companies. On March 3rd, just a couple of days ago, Dr. Clarissa Kripke interviewed the senator for this conference. We will now play the recording for you now. At the end of the interview, two of his health policy staff will be on hand to answer Q&A from the audience.
This talk is entitled Keeping the Promise: Healthcare Access for People with Developmental Disabilities in California. And the promise we're talking about is the promise in the Lanterman Act, which was first enacted in 1969. It establishes California's entitlement to services and supports for people with disabilities. And when I was first becoming a parent with a developmental disabilities, I read the act, and it starts with the state of California accepts a responsibility for people with developmental disabilities, which it must discharge. The complexities of providing services and supports to persons with developmental disabilities requires coordination of services of many state departments and community agencies to ensure that there's no gaps in communication or provision of services and supports. And I just felt enveloped in love by that. I was so moved by our community commitment to this population. So the first thing that I wanted to ask is, with all of the challenges and struggles that we as a nation and a state are facing, do you think California is still committed to this vision for people with disabilities that's outlined in the Lanterman Act?
Well, thanks for having me today. Yes, I do think California remains committed. The budget challenges have been significant over time, and they've gotten now much worse because of what Trump and his administration are doing in terms of slashing and burning everything. With that said, California has never done enough in terms of supporting our regional centers, supporting and funding various needs for folks with developmental disabilities. And so I do think California is committed. I don't think it's done enough, and it just got a lot harder.
Yes, I think with HR 1, where California could lose $30 billion a year in funding for Medi-Cal every year. What do you think the impact of HR 1 is going to be on access to health care for people with developmental disabilities?
Well, I think HR 1 is devastating for health care access for everyone. It's devastating for anyone on Medicaid, what we call Medi-Cal in California, and 40% of Californians are on Medi-Cal. And we know that many are going to lose their coverage because of HR 1, which specifically targeted Medicaid nationally. And that, of course, hits folks with developmental disabilities particularly hard because so many do rely on Medi-Cal for their health care. And because one of the really evil things that HR 1 did was to put all sorts of administrative and paperwork obstacles in front of people just to be able to stay on. And so for folks who are already have challenges in their lives and so many things to deal with, this is one more thing. And so people are going to lose coverage as a result. In addition, they targeted the Affordable Care Act, what we call Covered California in California. And so for folks who are not on Medi-Cal, they may rely on the Affordable Care Act. Well, the Affordable Care Act, the premiums are exploding because Trump and his administration and HR 1, they got rid of the subsidies. And so they're jacking up those premiums. So people are dropping off because they can't afford it. In addition, that means that our insurance pool is less healthy because healthier people are the most likely to drop off when premiums go up. And that makes insurance more expensive for everyone. And on top of all of it, with their effort to crater Medicaid and the ACA, they're harming hospitals, particularly rural hospitals, but all hospitals. And so we will see probably hospital closures or scaling back. So everyone's going to be hurt. And we know that when these systems get debilitated financially, the people who are hurt the worst are the folks with the greatest needs, and that includes people with developmental disabilities.
Wow. That's discouraging because HR 1 wasn't supposed to target people with disabilities. It was supposed to target people, but everybody is going to be wrapped up in it. I think many people, almost everybody with developmental disabilities has Medi-Cal insurance, but many also have Medicare insurance as well as, and some have private insurance through their families or through work themselves. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about access to mental health care services. It seems like when you have so much insurance that access to mental health services should be easy and straightforward, but our community is really struggling to access mental health services, and often these systems, when there's multiple systems that are supposed to be funding mental health care services like regional center, like Medi-Cal, and like private health insurance or Medicare, they just fight with each other over who should provide the care, and nobody really sets themselves up to do it because there is sort of a specialized expertise needed for this population. So what do you think can be done to ensure that the mental health care system has the expertise and the delivery systems to serve people with developmental disabilities?
Yeah, so we, one of the biggest laws that I passed was Senate Bill 855, which is California's mental health parity law, to require that insurance treat coverage for behavioral health issues the same as physical health. And historically, insurance has treated mental health coverage as a nice to have as opposed to a need to have or must have, and that's not acceptable. So we passed that law about 5 years ago. There, you know, it's been up and down with implementation and enforcement, but it is having some benefits. We also passed a law to require timely access to appointments, so that you don't have to wait months for your follow-up appointment. And it's important, whether on government programs or private insurance, for mental health to be treated equivalent to physical health. We also know that we have a shortage of behavioral health providers, and we've done some work investing to ramp up our behavioral health workforce, and there's a lot more work to do there.
Wonderful. I think a lot of people don't know about that timely access law and know how to use it to get services in a more prompt way. So that's a good thing to highlight. Thank you. Other people who struggle to access healthcare are transgender people. Autism is the most common developmental disability, and transgender and non-binary people are up to 6 times more likely to be autistic, and 10 to 25% of autistic people are transgender. Can you talk a little bit about efforts in California to ensure access to treatment for transgender people?
Yeah. First of all, we need to do a much better job screening young children for autism, so that, you know, they can get help and support early, as opposed to figuring it out when they're older, and you lose a lot of time. For trans people, we have worked very hard to expand and protect healthcare access, and that means we passed various laws to hold our own healthcare system in California accountable to not discriminate. We were able to convince the UC to disassociate from Catholic hospitals that were impeding access to gender affirming care in addition to reproductive health care. It is a growing problem with Catholic health care, which they provide some superb care, but it is a growing segment of our healthcare system, and it is subject to religious dictates from bishops, and so you might have communities where the only healthcare available is through a Catholic hospital, and there's no reproductive healthcare, no gender affirming care. That's unacceptable. We certainly should not be having some of those issues bleed into the UC. And so I'm grateful that the UC made that change. So we have done a lot of work to try to shore up and protect access for trans people. Of course, we now have a federal administration under Trump that is trying to destroy healthcare access for trans people, trying to just ban it and criminalize it for anyone under the age of 19. And we're now even seeing efforts to target it for adults. And so we are fighting back. We have, unfortunately, institutions in California and elsewhere like Kaiser that have sort of pulling away from providing this care. Sutter started to do that. I think they pulled back. They've reversed at least some of that. And there's going to be increasing pressure because Trump is they have a proposed rule to say that if you provide gender affirming care to anyone under 19, you're ineligible for Medicaid, Medicare, any other federal health program, which is, you know, aiming a nuclear weapon at these health systems, and that needs to be litigated, and we need to have trans people's backs and not just, you know, bend the knee to this evil that they are trying to inflict on us. So it's incredibly important.
Wow, there's so many that this population accesses so many public services that it compounds. It's not just one thing, that your health insurance, the healthcare providers, it's multiple things. And another aspect is the long-term care piece and the workforce of people who provide care for people with developmental disabilities who are losing their health insurance and therefore becoming less stable employees, or are being deported, or are afraid of, even if they're here legally, or are too afraid to come to work. What can California do to ensure that we have healthy people who've had their immunizations and who've had access to healthcare, who can provide us with care so that we have stable support?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is another, I mean, their mass deportation policies where they're both deporting people and also just terrorizing communities so that people self-deport sometimes or go into hiding and don't want to come out, don't want to work, don't want to go to school because they're scared of being separated from their families. And it's harming various workforces, for example, construction industry is being impacted, our agricultural sector, and the healthcare system, particularly home healthcare, but various kinds of healthcare where we're losing workforce. And we were already short-staffed. We need more home healthcare workers, not fewer. And you know, a lot of this workforce there are a lot of immigrants working there, and so we need to end this administration's mass deportation policy because it's harming us in so many ways, including healthcare.
Yes, for sure. I want to shift to public health too. In my neighborhood, a school had to close down because they had 200 cases of tuberculosis, which I haven't seen in a long time. And there's measles in Bay Area wastewater now. We're having a really severe flu season, and our public health infrastructure is being dismantled. How can we ensure that public health infrastructure stays strong?
Yeah, so after the pandemic, during the pandemic, we learned how the weaknesses in our public health system. And so we worked in the budget to beef up resources for public health infrastructure in California. We have since had some disputes with the governor about that. We need to make sure that that funding happens and that the counties have the basic public health support that they need. But now again, we have this what Trump is doing. They're working overtime to destroy the federal science agencies, to cut scientific research funding. They do not believe in to destroy USAID, which has played such a key role in global public health, because of course diseases do not know borders. And so if we allow diseases to circulate and spread in other countries or continents, it will impact us eventually. And they are also, of course, very opposed to vaccines. And that's why we see a resurgence of measles. I'm worried that polio is gonna make a comeback. It's deeply concerning. And so we, in California, we should be investing significantly in public health, but we just gotta have change in the federal government and rebuild the CDC, NIH, et cetera. I do have a bill this year to put a science bond on the ballot, which is not specific, public health in the sense of research. It's not basic public health infrastructure, but we want California to continue to lead on all forms of science, including around healthcare and vaccines and treatments and so forth. And so we're working hard with a coalition to try to get that bond through the legislature onto the ballot.
Yes, I have patients in my practice whose developmental disabilities were caused by vaccine preventable illnesses, specifically congenital rubella, which if people got their MMR could have been prevented. As we do this, it is going to increase the number of people with developmental disabilities and put more pressure on the systems that serve our children. So thank you for efforts to invest in continued research and continued public health infrastructure. I really appreciate that as a physician and who cares for this population. I want to turn to parents. In the past, when the Lanham Act was passed, most people were moving from institutions to 24-hour care and group homes. But now the majority of people with developmental disabilities are living with family, with aging parents, and those parents need support to provide their care even as they age and need care themselves. So what can California do to help aging caregivers who are providing a tremendous service to people with developmental disabilities and to the state through their efforts? What can we do to help people who are continuing to live in family homes?
Yeah, I mean, we need to strengthen the IHSS program. So when family or particularly staying home to care for a relative instead of working, you know, they should be paid. Or if you need to bring in someone else to come in and help, they should have the ability to do that. IHSS is critically important for seniors, for people with disabilities, and those IHSS workers are doing the Lord's work, and they're not paid well enough. We've been trying to move towards statewide collective bargaining for IHSS because there are different counties provide different levels of support, but IHSS is an essential part of the safety net so that people can stay in their homes, not be institutionalized. It is much more, it's more humane, it's better for them, and it's more cost effective. You know, we need to support IHSS. And we've worked in the budget, we've rejected various cuts that the administration has proposed.
IHHS is the largest self-direction program in the country, and I think a lot of families, immigrant families, people who don't speak English, other communities don't realize that family members can be an IHHS worker and get paid for the care that they're already providing. Yeah. And so they don't get that resource for their family. It can be quite a lot of money if you're providing a lot of care and there are high needs. I'm wondering, maybe we can work harder at making sure that all communities are equally aware of that benefit and how to access it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we protected funding for IHSS support for undocumented people. And so that benefit is there to help support people. And it is important to get the word out in a culturally competent way.
Right. And the last thing I wanted to talk to you about was about housing, because a lot of the reason why people are still living with their family is because of the high cost of care, the high cost of housing and the lack of housing. We can usually find a way to support people if we can find a way to house them. Often people are pushed into group homes instead of into self-direction programs or supported living programs because they don't have access to affordable housing. Some people have been able to put ADUs on their family property to allow people a little bit more independence, but what opportunities are there to ensure that people with developmental disabilities can live in their own homes with support and aren't forced into group homes, not because that's the model that they prefer, but just because it comes with housing?
Yeah, I mean, we really have been just trying to expand housing production of every variety, right? Ranging from market rate homes to mixed income, to homes for low-income folks, to homes for very, very low income people, including formerly homeless people, to for emancipated foster youth, seniors, etc. And so it is really, really important. We also know that for people with physical disabilities, new construction is subject to the ADA. And so it tends to be much more accessible than older construction. We've got into a rut where we just weren't building much of anything, and we're trying to now build all variety of housing, and that will help everyone. And we obviously want to make sure we're building housing for folks with disabilities and folks with limited incomes.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your efforts to serve our community in California and your willingness to talk about it and the issues. This is a really confusing and difficult time for our community, and knowing that we have leaders who are working on our behalf and paying attention to our community is just super important. And I'm deeply grateful for your being here today to talk to us and to share your perspectives. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for Senator Wiener's comments, interview, and also for Dr. Kripke for her outstanding interview. And while we're waiting for staff of Dr. Wiener, Senator Wiener's office, we just covered so much during this short period of time, from HR1 to mental health care access, immigrant workforce, public health, housing. It just was a very compelling interview. Clarissa, you interviewed Senator Wiener, and I guess together perhaps we might add a few more thoughts to some of the things that were discussed. The first question that comes to my mind is how healthcare professionals, as well as self-advocates, families, people in the community, can communicate with legislators, especially for help with implementation when bills get passed, to make sure that the intent of the bill matches the actual outcome of the bills.
Yes, I think there's a lot of comments in the chat about all the changes that are happening about in disability policy, and perceiving a political slant. And I think it's important to point out that the Lanterman Act was signed by Ronald Reagan, and the Americans with Disabilities Act, with the 504, was signed by George Bush. And disability in California and across the country has in the past definitely been a bipartisan issue. It's very hard to raise taxes in California for any reason, but there were Republicans having actual rallies in support of raising taxes for the developmental disability system. So what we're talking about here today is not about Democrat or Republican issues. It's about understanding how our developmental disability system and disability systems are structured, and massive changes that the current federal administration is putting through that is going to make significant changes to those policies and those organizations and those structures that we have come to rely on, and understanding the implications. So I think we should maybe if people have any comments that they want to put in the Q&A, we can bring up other perspectives or other thoughts about how these policies might benefit some communities or some people with disabilities, in addition to the ways in which people are concerned about their access to healthcare.
Clarissa, thank you so much for the clarification. I'm wondering, you know, as you're providing healthcare to your patients, you know, all the pending changes must be causing a lot of stress, and I'm wondering if those conversations come up.
Well, I'm certainly, certainly there have been staffers who have lost their health insurance, and so it's making it more difficult for the people I serve to retain their staff, and it has also been, and you know, of course, I'm concerned the regional centers do cover all California residents, so I'm concerned about people losing their Medi-Cal and losing their housing and possibly patients dying as a result, frankly. I want to welcome Max from Senator Weiner's office.
Y'all, sorry for the bit of the delay.
Hi. One question we had for the senator was from Judy Mark, who leads a disability rights organization called Disability Voices United. She says, we want to thank Senator Weiner for being such a champion for people with disabilities and for equity. And the question is whether Senator Weiner will be supporting and possibly leading an effort in the legislature to increase revenue to minimize the impact of HR 1. And if yes, what kinds of revenues might he be looking at?
Yeah, I don't want to speak too specifically to any efforts. I know that there's been a large conversation. There's going to be continuing conversation around how we're responding to HR 1 and the impact that's going to have on our healthcare systems. It's an ongoing point of concern and focus within the state legislature, and it's something Senator Weiner will be very engaged on. I apologize. I largely am here to speak on behalf of SB 895 and the research bond. So I'm not quite authorized to speak more broadly on other prospective efforts beyond the fact that one of the things we're seeing from the federal government is the pushback and clawback in our research dollars. SB 895 is a very clear response to that, which will have mass implications on the types of medicines and cures and therapies that are available to all individuals, including individuals in the disabilities community. And so that's one angle of the pushback. But certainly there's ongoing conversations within the legislature around there's this great desire from the federal administration to not meet up to the commitments of the federal government that there have been for a long time. And California will continue to push back against that and make sure our communities are served.
Max, since you mentioned the bill, can you say more about that? And I think maybe about 20% of our audience is from out of state.
Yeah, absolutely. So SB 895 is a bill to place a $23 billion research bond onto the state ballot in November to be approved by voters. The idea behind the bond is pretty straightforward, that the federal government has been a massive champion for a long time now of scientific research and inquiry. If we look at NIH, NFS, FDA, they tons of money comes from the federal government into research spaces, and we've seen just a complete attack on that from the current administration, and from there's been pushback on that in Congress. Congress has wanted to continue to fund those organizations to past amounts, but even when the funding is there, there's and the appropriation is made, that money hasn't flown out. They've been holding back the money that is supposed to be flowing into these research programs and grants, and then the money that does come out, it's being more politically driven in terms of the pursuits it goes to. Entire fields of study are being completely cut out and frozen out from being able to be funded. The fewer grants are going out. the way the grants are being administered is in such a way that they're actually far less stable and far less able for researchers to capitalize on them. And so it results in this situation in which critical life-saving research is not going to be able to be done. California is by far the largest research state in the country. I think we contribute almost a third of the whole, if you look at like the entire nation's, like how much each state contributes to our research, like research dollars, California is doing about a third. The next highest state is Washington State, which is, I think, at like 6%. So California is by far doing more in this research space, and these cuts to research dollars really disproportionately impact us. The UC is a recipient of about 10% of all NIH grants, and that's just NIH, not talking about NFS, not talking about the other orgs. So it's really critical that in order for California to continue to lead in this space, in order for California to continue to develop the health outcomes that we have been able to produce across the past, all of our modern history, essentially. The state needs to step up, and we need to say we're not going to just simply roll over and take these cuts to critical infrastructure. We're going to invest. We're going to double down on California, and we're going to say California will continue to be a global leader in the research space.
So, listening to what you're saying, I just wanted to make sure I had this right, that California is going to provide the funding that has been lost from the federal government. Go ahead.
Yeah, essentially the goal is to create a structure in which California can independently be funding our the research that takes place here in our state, that we won't be reliant upon NIH and NFS in order for these research programs to go forward. I mean, in an ideal world, in a perfect world, we would love to continue to work in partnership and to utilize NIH NFS dollars. Like the research is a net good in our mind. The more research, the better. It contributes an incredible amount to our economy. It creates life-changing outcomes for individuals. It's part of why California is the fourth largest economy in the world. It draws top-tier talent to our state. It makes our state just richer and livelier and more full. Scientific inquiry is good. And so we would like for more of it. We would like to be working with NIH. We would like to be working with NFS. But we're seeing a politicization. We're seeing a cut to how much California that has historically been a champion and been great at being able to use these and engage with these federal institutions. We're just not seeing that continue. And so we're not gonna, we can't lose this space. We can't lose our position in this space. So California will have our own foundation that is in charge of grants and loans and contracts to ensure research is still happening. And hopefully that will be able to work in tandem with the federal institutions, but it's being dependent on them is providing a serious liability and risk.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm assuming this is not a one-time thing, that this is something that will continue at least for the time being.
Well, the bond is a $23 billion bond. So it's a sizable bond. I think the goal and the hope is that the foundation in time could be self-sufficient and ongoing. So there's yeah, the I don't think the goal is to continue to place bonds on the ballot year after year that are frankly expensive. In order to keep that going, I think the hope would be that could become a self-perpetuating institution to a certain extent, and that that could get built out.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm just realizing that it's time actually for a break. So I just wanted to appreciate your answering the questions, and also for Senator Wiener for the interview. Thank you.
Absolutely. I hope you all have a great rest of your day.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.